Valiant Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. It's time for Valiant Sunday, and this is going to be a little bit of a shorter Sunday this week. I'm just going to talk about a couple of the books that are coming out this Wednesday, but I don't want to get too spoilery because I know a lot of you won't get them until Wednesday, but I just wanted to give you my thoughts on Bloodshot Salvation number 9 and also Ninja K number 7. So let's go with Bloodshot Salvation number 9 first and give you the creative team really quickly. It's written by Ray Fox with Jeff Lemire. The art is by Renato Guedes. So this is kind of an interlude, I suppose you'd say, in the narrative that's been going on in Bloodshot Salvation. And it's basically the origin of Bloodhound. And the story opens up in World War I, September 24th, 1916, and it's all about trench warfare. British going against the Germans, and, you know, it's a pretty horrific time, that trench warfare. Guys would die in those trenches, you know, daily, you know, whether it was from actually being wounded in battle or sickness or the mustard gas or the rats or the disease, or, you know, some of them, their feet would literally rot off their bodies from gangrene and, you know, infections. And so it was, like I said, pretty horrific ordeal. And so that's the setting that Fox and Lemire have for this story. And basically what happens is a scientist shows up behind the British lines, and he has 5 soldiers, he calls them, that are going to help the British push forward and take some of the ground from the Germans. And those soldiers actually turn out to be dogs. So we don't get any of the science behind what exactly is going on, but clearly because of one of them is Bloodhound, we know that there's got to be some kind of nanites or some kind of, you know, genetic manipulation. There's something going on there. You know, might not necessarily have been nanites, but, you know, we've seen recently in the Bloodshot stories at Valiant that there were Bloodshots throughout history, and they've always been soldiers at the cutting edge of science, you know, boosted up and enhanced in whatever way the science of the day could handle. So it's an interesting story. It does give us some background to Bloodhound, but it's not really deeply detailed into how exactly he's enhanced. So if that's what you're looking for, you're not going to find that here. And we also don't really get any more insight into Bloodhound than we get in the regular narrative, right? It's not like we can understand his thoughts or his feelings or anything that's going on there. It's all told from the perspective of the soldiers and the scientists. And, you know, I won't give away too many details of the climax of the story or how it ends, just because, as I said, I don't want to spoil it for you. I want you to be able to read it for yourself. But on the last page, we see Bloodhound sleeping next to Bloodshot. And we get the feeling that Bloodhound has been dreaming and kind of remembering all this stuff that happened back then. So not exactly sure where it fits into the narrative of the current Bloodshot storyline. I have a feeling it's just, you know, throw it in anywhere, so to speak, but certainly not in the dead side, because there's no sign of Jesse. Bloodshot's laying on the ground, it appears, with the pillow behind his head. Maybe this is before he ever left home. So, again, not completely sure where it fits in. And an interesting choice to put it in here. Don't know exactly what that timing's about. I have heard some complaints recently about Bloodshot Salvation and how, you know, this kind of decompressed story that Lemire is telling is kind of wearing thin for some fans, I think. I think that previous Tales of Bloodshot, maybe when Straczynski was doing it, the narrative seemed to move a lot quicker. And it was a nice change of pace after The Valiant when Bloodshot Reborn started. It was more of a long-form decompressed story. But I think now, as I said, some of the fans are maybe getting a bit restless and they're ready for the narrative to move a little faster. And this might also have to do, like, with the speed of storytelling, might also have to do with the artists that have been on the book. They're not the fastest, and the art's super detailed and really beautiful, but you pay for that in terms of it taking, you know, a longer period of time doing this, you know, beautiful photorealistic art as opposed to more traditional comic art where you have more panels to actually tell the story, and so the story progresses a little quicker. So, you know, things are still a little bit up in the air over at Valiant. We're still getting acclimated, and people are just going to have to get used to the idea. It's not the same company that we knew and loved, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's still a little bit of a wait-and-see process, I think. As far as the art for this particular book, I've gone on record as saying I'm not the biggest fan of Renato Guedes, but I think his art is fine for this. Again, not super detailed, but it suits kind of the barbaric atmosphere and the horror of that trench warfare. But again, it's just not my favorite kind of artwork. It's similar to Su Yan and Louis LaRosa, who've been the regular artist on Bloodshot for quite a while, but it's not quite as detailed, I guess you'd say. Where the art does shine, though, is the actual storytelling. Can't fault his storytelling at all. From panel to panel, the narrative is easily followed, very well done. And he also varies the camera angles around in the panels quite well, so that I find that interesting as well. So all in all, a good story, not a great story. To be honest, I think I was hoping for a little more. A little more of a dynamic story with Bloodhound, and a little more focused on him. He's almost ancillary to the story in a way. And, you know, he survives the trench warfare, but maybe because he survived the trench warfare is why I felt he should have been a little more, focused on the story. You know, spotlight should have been a little more on him, but. That's not for me to say, right? But it was an enjoyable issue. As I said, good, not great. So let's go ahead and move on to Ninja K number 7. And this one is great. Let me give the creative team first. It's written by Christos Gage. We've got art by Juan Jose Reap. Colors by Jordi Belair. So this is the second issue in the second arc of Ninja K, and I have to say that Christos Gage has been completely blowing me away. I've read plenty of his work before, specifically loved his Absolution run, liked what he did on the few issues of Bloodshot and the Hardcore that he was on before he joined the writing staff for the Deadpool Netflix series, but I didn't expect this level of craftsmanship from Gage. That's no slight on him. I just, you know, I hadn't read a whole ton of his work. But this is some masterful storytelling here. And what I particularly love, like overall impression of the comic, is that I felt like there was so much story here, you know, and it was a stark contrast to the Bloodshot issue where it didn't feel like there was a lot there and the story was over so quickly. There were times when I was reading the Bloodshot book where I was, or the Ninjak book rather, where I was like, oh, it's not over yet. There's more, like, there's more. I just felt like it was a lot of value for the comic reader. We get some advancement of or insight into the relationship with Ninjak and Livewire. So that was really cool. We got some good, I don't want to say exposition, but just kind of a laying out what's going on, right? Like last issue of Ninja K, we saw Ninjak go into Mexico to try and capture his backup K2. We found out Jonin was there, the the ninja or ninja master, if you will, that trained ninjas. I think it was C through I, I want to say, or B through I, maybe, who's clearly turned for some reason. We don't know what his motivations are yet. But we get good exposition here, good explanation from Neville about who this consortium is that is that had injured Ninjak and has some ideas about taking over Mexico or establishing some kind of beachhead. They clearly have some plans that don't line up with, you know, the powers that be. You know, the United States and MI6 are not going to really stand by and let Joan in and, you know, whoever else that's there, this coalition, they're just not going to let it go unchecked, right? We've got Linton March, who's a billionaire occultist and seems to have some kind of ties to the Dead Hand, or the Dead Side, rather, I should say. And then we've got the Jonin himself. We've got some guy, I hadn't seen him before, but apparently he's fought against Ninjak and Unity before, and he's able to shapeshift or something like that. And then we also have from the pages of the Divinity Stalinverse crossover, Kosti the Deathless, an immortal, that she's the one that basically her flesh rots away and then she's like reborn. And then, yeah, the Ultimo, the guy who's able to alter his unique cellular makeup. So he seems like he'd be kind of immortal as well. So this coalition, yeah, again, we're not completely sure what their motivations are. But suffice it to say, they're up to no good. So we get the laydown and the lowdown of that from Neville Alcott explaining to the team. We get Ninjak, we get Livewire. We also get some Punk Mambo and some Dr. Mirage. They're recruited as well for this mission. So it's really cool to see Christos get to play with some of the other characters and some of the other toys in the Valiant Sandbox. And I know some people feel like, well, Ninjak works best as a solar character. And I agree to a point, but sometimes it's fun to just bring, you know, other characters in, and it shows that, you know, Ninjak is part of this greater value universe. And plus it's just done so well, and they don't all get along necessarily. They don't all like agree on the best way to do things. Ninjak really does not like Punk Mambo, feels she's unprofessional and just not a very good human being. Whereas Dr. Mirage seems to be a little more accepting of her, her kind of alternate way of looking at the world based on the fact that she's, you know, a magic user. So it's those fun little idiosyncrasies that make a good team as far as us being able to read about them, right? And it's the interaction of the characters that make it fun and interesting and can bring some drama and conflict to the team that, again, make for a good story. So kudos to Christos Gage for that. Just doing little things like when they go to meet Punk Mambo, she's thrown up in the street. You know, right away, even if you've never read a book about her, you get an understanding of kind of, you know, the way she is. She's actually in the middle of fighting some zombies, and the rest of the team help take them out. I guess I should also mention that Ginger, the robot, is a member of the team as well. But things don't necessarily go that great for Ginger, as we see in the end, because even though the team thinks that they're surprising the coalition are expecting them to do exactly what they are doing. So the Jonin seems to be a little ahead of the game, maybe when it comes to strategy or just knowing what the team is up to. So the other thing I'm going to say is about the art. As I mentioned, Juan Jose Reap is the artist. And I feel like his art is evolving a little bit. I remember the first time I ever saw his work was on Clone from Skybound, Robert Kirkman's imprint over there at Image. And when I first looked at it, I just thought it was a little weird, looked a little off. A lot of the shading done with dots, and just didn't hate it, but didn't necessarily like it. And then as that series went on, it grew on me, right? And it to the point where I like really enjoyed it, and I couldn't imagine anyone else doing that book except for him. And he's been doing work for Valiant for a few years now. But this is the first time I really feel like there's more of a softness to his art, almost to the point where I was like, wait, did he like not ink himself? Is there somebody else who's doing work? And maybe it has to do with Jordi Belair's colors. I'm not really sure, but his art is as beautiful and as detailed as ever. But again, it has a little bit more of a softness to it. Maybe the lines are a little bit finer. He's not using line weights that are quite as thick. But his storytelling and the emotion in his face and the action scenes are just as dynamic as they've ever been. The backgrounds, you know, plenty of detail in the costume. I love how he moves the camera around in the panels and varies the angles and the layouts within the panels. Because again, it's a great way to show movement, especially, I mean, there's quite a bit of talking and dialogue in this issue because, you know, they're visiting Ninjak in the hospital as he recovers from his injury. They're talking about the different members of the coalition. They're recruiting their team. They're briefing the team on the members of the coalition. And then the team itself is talking about the best way to initiate contact with the coalition. So again, it's definitely a dialogue heavy issue, and that probably contributed to the fact that it felt like there was a lot of story here. But when you have those dialogue heavy issues, at times it can sometimes get boring, right? If you just kind of seen the same angle in the panel with the, you know, it's just character's head and word balloons, right? Going back and forth, panel to panel to panel, pages and pages upon pages of that, your eye can get tired of seeing that. That doesn't happen if the artist is constantly moving around the room, changing the camera angles, swinging around, even to the point of, you know, an angle looking down from above or looking up from below, just to keep it interesting and engaging. And Rip does that exceptionally well. So, and then just a quick note about the colors. I don't really think there's anybody in the comic industry as prolific or as well known or as amazing as Jordi Belair right now. I mean, everybody wants Jordi Belair to color their books because she's just amazing. A little bit more of a primary palette than I'm used to on a Valiant book, but it completely works. Her colors are very sublime. They're very, I don't want to say they're muted, but again, it suits the art because just as Rip has a little bit of a softer touch with his art in this issue, it's a little bit of a softer palette that Jordi Belair is using. Again, it's not muted because they don't look washed out at all, but she just doesn't use a lot of bright colors, so it makes it seem, in a way, much more realistic. And it's very well done. A lot of contrasting colors, but again, they're not glaring. They're not real brash, and they don't grab your attention except when they need to, like when the team is inside Ginger traveling to Mexico and Ginger's alarm goes off and all the lights within, you know, inside her in the place where people can travel go red to signify danger, and everybody's washed in red. That's a pretty bright panel, but for the most part the colors are relatively soft. There's an image with Punk Mambo calling out her Loa that's bright, but again, it suits the part of the story there. So incredible job by Jordi Belair. I hope she continues to do work with Valiant because she's just a true master of color artistry these days. So yeah, clearly, as you can see, just from the amount of time I talked about the two books, for me, Ninja K is really the book to pick up this week. Bloodshot Salvation is good. You know, I'd still recommend picking it up, and certainly if you've been following Bloodshot, but it's probably not an issue that you need to pick up if you're just checking in on Bloodshot from time to time, or if you want to jump on and understand what's been going on and what the current storyline is in Bloodshot, because it doesn't really tie in. And if you're somebody who just checks in from time to time, it's probably one you can skip, because again, it doesn't further any of the stories or plotline that are going on overall in Bloodshot Salvation. It's very much a one and done kind of issue that's easily skippable, and you won't miss out on any of the narrative of Bloodshot and the Dead Side and what's going on with Jesse and all that stuff. That's not to say I don't think it's worth picking up and it's not worth reading, especially if you're a fan of Bloodhound, because it is. It's just not as good as I hoped it would be, I guess you'd say. But Ninja K 7 rather lives up to any expectations I had. I'm absolutely loving this book from Christos Gage. I think that Bloodshot Salvation had been my favorite book at Valiant, but I think that from the first time I read Ninja K number 1, I was blown away with some of the things that Christos has been doing. It's been getting better and better each month, and it has surpassed everything else at Valiant and become my favorite book there without question. It's absolutely incredible, from the writing to the art to the colors. It's just really, really good. And I did have some reservations when I first read the solicitations for the second arc, that it was going to be Bloodshot and he was going to be bringing in a team because it was a little more than he could handle on his own. And I was like, I'm really here to read Ninja K, to read about Ninjak, not necessarily these other characters. But I needn't have worried, because Christos has done a great job of still making the story fun. It's still a Ninjak book, but it's again tying him into the rest of the Valiant universe, which you need to do from time to time. And it's still a really great and fun story, with incredible art and incredible color work. So it's definitely my favorite of the two Valiant books that came out this week. All right, I think that's going to do it for this episode. Don't forget, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast and all our previous Valiant Sunday episodes. I'm really hoping Jesse's going to be back next week so we can talk about Harbinger Wars number 2 Prelude, as well as talking about the first couple issues of Shadow Man. So look for that next week. Don't forget, while you're visiting us at lrmonline.com for all the past episodes, you can check out all our other coverage on pop cultures, movies, TV shows, all that kind of good stuff. You can follow The Comic Source on Twitter, twitter.com/TheComicSource. Also do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to follow along whenever we release new episodes, as well as all our convention coverage. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.